Welcome to another All Business Podcast. This is Ted Schubel. Thank you for bringing us up on your phone or computer or wherever you're listening. This is where we talk with area business owners, the people that make the region work. When we come back, we're all business.
The All Business Podcast is supported by Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com. Most folks who work here love living here, and that makes a difference. At Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com, they're proud to work the hometown advantage around the clock, connecting local employers to local job seekers. Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com makes it easy to post a job, and it's local, so you won't get spammed by faraway job seekers. And if you're looking for a good local job, search jobs and apply online right now. Get the advantage of finding a job close to home at Richmond to DC HelpWanted.com. Local jobs that work.
We are at 1104 Sophia Street, and we're talking pottery this week on the All Business Podcast. Kevin Rodrigue is here along with Didi Leckie, and welcome to both of you. Didi, I have known you in a number of different realms. I haven't known you in this particular realm.
Yeah, this is my passion. This is actually what I love doing every day and what everything else kind of gets in the way of. This is me throwing pottery. This is what started me down the path of owning Liberty Town and being a part of downtown Fredericksburg.
Interesting. So how did you two get together? Kevin, how'd you and Didi meet?
I know the answer to this.
That's a good question. I think...
Bench show.
Was that...
It's the
metal
show.
Bench show? we met through a metal show. I thought I had met you before that, though.
I think that's when we met. It was 2013 or 14?
Yeah.
It was a
metal art show at Liberty Town, and I was invited to be a part of it whenever I was a blacksmith, so...
Whoa. So I'm here thinking we're talking pottery, and you're talking metal and being a blacksmith?
Yeah, so it goes way back. I went to college to be a doctor. After the first semester, I decided to become a potter, and then after college, I went back into the family business and became a blacksmith, and I did that for about 20 years, and I just got tired of construction, and this is my passion, is clay. So my wife decided if I was going to do it, now was the time, you know, and so now I'm doing it full-time as a potter.
All right, Didi, you've got to beat that story.
All right, so I went to college to become a lawyer, majored in anthropology, was going to go do my GMATs and become a doctor of anthropology and teach anthropology, met my husband, went into property management, managed properties for a while. I had taken pottery in high school and loved it as an independent study because they didn't offer it as a class. Took a class at Liberty Town in 2008, 9, 10, somewhere in that range. Can't even remember. From Neil. Yeah. And in doing that, I got back into pottery and started throwing pottery and fell back in love with it and bought Liberty Town in 2013. You know, like you do. Yeah. When you love something, you just buy it, right?
Of course. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, both of these stories, I never would have guessed.
Yeah, we're both stone cold weirdos. That's why we like each other.
Most artists, I think, are that way. They have to do their passion. And so some of them decide that they're going to be waiters and then become artists. And some decide to go into a field, earn money, and then drop it and become artists. But inevitably, they have to become artists.
Yeah, it's like one of these, but it's also sort of like this dichotomy, right? So like we try to do what society tells us to do, which is to like make money traditionally, mm-hmm. with a 9-to-5 job, 40 hours a week, paid vacation, pension, you know, the whole nine yards. And it kills a little part of us. Like, I think it doesn't kill something for everybody. Like, some people are completely happy doing that stuff. But if you're like an artist, sometimes it really becomes the creativity isn't there. And so for me, I felt very squashed, and I was always looking for these like crazy outlets. I was baking and like decorating cookies for people all the time, and like painting like weird paintings, like just all these like little bursts of creativity. I put in gardens everywhere I lived, and like, you know, would decorate my offices and stuff. And then like the pottery just sort of subsumed all of that and took all my creative energy. So I don't do any of that other stuff anymore, which is much to everybody's chagrin. I no longer make cookies constantly and decorate them. But what are you gonna do?
So, Kevin, do you think, because especially with your background of, you know, doing, you know, being a blacksmith, I mean, does that make you now a better artist, you think, as a potter?
I believe that just the craftsmanship is what I really learned most from that, and then the business side of it, because we did a lot of construction. We worked with contractors and contracts. And by working with contracts, I learned a lot about the business side of being a potter and being an artist. But the craftsmanship was always there, because I even dabbled in woodworking for a little bit, just because I had to find something outside of construction. The issue with being a blacksmith is I was always making somebody else's dream. I was doing it as well as I could, but I was always making their dream come true, like an architect or owner of a home or what have you. And then this way, I'm able to make my dream come true, and then people will eat off of it. They will drink out of it for every day of their lives. They'll actually choose it first thing in the morning for their coffee or what have you. So this to me is much more intimate and much more positive part of somebody's life is the ceramics itself.
Wow, I've never heard it described that way, but that is pretty cool to think, because I mean I've got pottery bowls all around the house and pick certain ones in the morning. I guess, I mean, I've never thought about it that you would, you know, that would really be something that that you know, gets you up every morning.
Yeah. It there's actually a real science behind it. You hold a handle a certain way, and everybody holds it differently. There are three major ways to hold it, but
we all have debates about
yeah.
this. It's
and
like
then
a huge
there,
in pottery.
Their lips have to be a certain way in order to fit your lip properly. The weight of the mug or weight of the dish is important. And it can be heavy, it can be light, but it all has to do with how it's being used. Every part of a piece of pottery is usually very well thought out compared to your commercial pottery, which is all about production and how to produce it fast and more inexpensive. A potter puts in more aesthetic reasons and reasons for it to be held and be used. So,
yeah, they, I mean, yeah, with like commercial and industrial design, sometimes the original designs, you know, are designed by artists, right? So like an IKEA mug or something, or no brand names, a large big box store with yellow and blue lettering might design a mug that's actually aesthetically pretty but impractical, right? So like the handle's way too small and cuts into your fingers when you're holding it, or it's made of low fire clay that chips readily when you put it in the dishwasher. So, you know, potters think about all of that stuff. You know, I have a beautiful pot from an unnamed potter who shall remain unnamed, that I love dearly, but the lip is way too thick. And so I dribble coffee every time I drink out of it. So I avoid it, even though it's very pretty. So it's like all those things have to like, it's a lot. Like people think all we do is sit around and make mud pies all day, but yeah. There's a lot of like little things that we do, little design tweaks and tests and all kinds of stuff that we do. Not even to mention like the glaze chemistry and the firing schedules. Like, yeah. Kevin does much more. I do electric firing, which is pretty simple, pretty basic. But he does gas-fired reduction, which is a much more complex process maybe your listeners will be into hearing about, or maybe not. But it involves reducing the oxygen content in the clay to force chemical reactions on the clay surface. So, like, that can go real sideways sometimes. Yeah. So you can lose, like, an entire kiln load.
So, yes, she's correct. Reduction atmosphere is the... Basically, at a certain stage, it's taking all the oxygen out of the kiln to, number one, strengthen the body, and then you keep it in reduction, and it changes the glazes. One glaze that I have is green and oxidation. Whenever I fire at reduction, it's more of a mauve color, so it's kind of red. But I also love wood firing, which I'm working now on building a kiln, and wood firing is much more labor intensive. You actually stoke it, the fuel is wood, and you'll stoke it for 24 hours, if not longer. And it just creates a little aesthetic change, but that little aesthetic change is what I'm striving for.
You can see the kiln, on the pots, which is kind of what Kevin does with the reduction too. Like, you can see some of the movement within the kiln, some of where the heat goes. Like, there's something really sort of antiseptic with a electric firing, which is what I typically do.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you get the same results every time. It's a real consistent workhorse for getting results, and it's great for that. But you don't see the firing. You don't see the effort as much. So when you get into these, like, reduction and wood fires where the ash is literally floating through the kiln and landing onto the pots and crystallizing onto the pots in something called ash fall, where the actual chemical reaction of the wood ash, people do fake that in electric kilns by literally sprinkling wood ash onto the pots, but you get like this natural flow, and then you can see where like flames lick across pots. It's so sexy. It's awesome.
Especially with wood firing, but it's also with reduction. You literally are stacking the kiln to control the flame and its path through the kiln and out of the kiln to touch the pots in certain ways. And the flame actually changes the aesthetics of the pot. So we could geek out about it a whole lot, but basically a potter has to be a geologist, has to be a chemist, has to be a little bit of a pyro, has to be an artist.
A lot more of a pyro. Yeah. I think we're really interested in fire, like to perhaps like detrimental level.
And so they really have to have their math down. I mean, it takes everything to be a potter. And more importantly, you got to love food and company. I think potters are one of the few art forms that literally they all get together. They share everything because it's been done so long that it's hard to be brand new.
We don't have like, there's no like secrets. You know, there are certain potters that have worked really hard, like John Britt's famous for his Cone 6 glaze book, right?
Yeah.
So he produces this book that's really fantastic. And it's kind of bad form to share his recipes out of there because he's done a lot of work in it. But, like, he will readily talk to you. Like, there's a whole Facebook page. He sits there and, like, people will ask him questions about glazes that they've sort of, you know, and he'll, like, go through and help them run tests. And so there's nothing new in pottery. It's been around since BC, like, just forever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's all about sharing and taking care of each other and, like, supporting one another because it's hard enough. Like, potters used to get together in Japan and in Korea and do giant communal firings because the huge kilns they had that rolled up the mountainsides, it would take, you know, 6 or 7 potters just to fill them to be able to fire them, and it would take 5 days to fire the pots and the kilns. So you have to have a sense of community.
Yeah.
That's where we excel at.
You're talking thousands of pots. I mean, we're 10 to 20,000 a month, pretty much. It's insane the numbers that they had. And actually at one time China was having a problem because they had cut down pretty much all the trees in the areas that they had these kilns, so they had to ship the trees from far away, and it just became really difficult for them. So anyways,
he's like, I'm going to edit so much of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, this is going to run just as it is. This is fascinating stuff.
Okay.
A couple minutes ago, Kevin, you talked about 24 hours of, I mean, are you up for 24 hours or?
Well, you hope not. Yes.
I am.
If you're doing it right, Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin, we are a community. You should not be out for 24 hours. It's not safe.
Thank you.
Well, the longer firings are, you definitely aren't.
You need a buddy.
Yeah.
You need a buddy so you can go take a nap.
Okay.
So, and that's typically how most wood fires are done. Like most potters that do wood firings, yes, you have to, somebody has to be with that kiln for the entire period. You cannot walk away from it because if it loses temperature or something goes sideways, like somebody needs to be there stoking. There's no automatic fuel source.
Just as an example, when you start the kiln, it's running like a standard fireplace. You put wood in it maybe once every 20 to 30 minutes. But once you get up to around temperature or getting up there, you're putting probably 4 pieces of solid wood in there for about maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then you have to do it again. So it is a very, very intensive process in the sense that you're constantly feeding this thing wood. I think in a 24-hour firing, probably a cord and a half, 2 cords of wood. So it's a lot of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So
labor intensive too. Yeah. That's why we always get the young people to help us.
Yeah.
That's why
especially
young people
when it's
are
time
like,
to split wood. Yeah. Yeah. You want to put a pot in? You need to cut up a cord.
So Dan was famous for like having like helpers. That would be what their main job was. Like he would go like take a nap in his car, and they would be stoking from like midnight to 8 a.m. or whatever. But yeah.
What's interesting about all this, and we're at Sophia Street Studios, Kevin Rodrigue and Dee Dee Lucky here on the All Business Podcast this week. What is so interesting, though, is that, you know, you'll all do a show or something, and I'll go and I'll look at it like that. I might not, you know, look at that. A lot of work goes into all this stuff. It's not
and
just...
you're only seeing the success. Like, for every pot that makes it on the shelf, there are probably 10 to 15 that didn't. Like, that's just how it kind of goes. When you get better at it, it's less and less and less. Yeah. Like, but on average, you lose, what, between 10 to 20% of your pots to... Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, when people are like, whoa, a mug for $40, like, who can live at this speed? I'm like, you have no idea. I might be losing money on that. I refuse to do the real math. Like, yeah. But it is. It's you have to be a little crazy and a little bit passionate to be a potter full time. I think you can absolutely make a living at it, but it teaches you how to fail and fail gracefully in a way that nothing else in my life ever did. Like, I went to therapy for so many years for my perfectionist OCD, and pottery knocked them out of me in so many ways.
It makes your mind definitely stop.
Yeah.
And because you have to concentrate on the wheel.
So much of what you do, you have to, you make a pot, right? So you first you have to learn how to throw a pot. That's step one. That's a lot harder than it looks. It's physics, it's material science, but it's also muscle memory and hands. You throw a pot. Great. You have to trim it properly. Great. You have to add a handle properly. Great. You have to decorate it properly. Great. You have to fire it in the first kiln properly. You've got to glaze it properly. You've got to have the glaze firing go fine. And then it's got to come out of the kiln without any kind of like gradue or anything falling on it from the kiln during the firing process. And then once you get it out on the shelf, like, then you've got to sell it. And anywhere between point A and point Z, you know, a million things can go wrong. Like, your glaze can be wrong. Something can happen to it. It can get, like, something dropped in it, or it can be the wrong thickness, and it completely decimates your pots and falls off of them, or it's too thin, and it mats out, and it's not food safe anymore. Or, like, in, you know, adding the elements of wood firing and reduction firing in the equation, now you've got, like, did you get a proper reduction on your pots? Now they're all the wrong color. And and now you're trying to make a set for somebody, and like half the pots were in one load and half the pots were in the other, and they're completely different colors. So there's so much to it that you have to get a real zen attitude about things, and really, like, seriously. And I'm not even kidding. Like, you have to, like, I've gotten so good at being disappointed. That sounds terrible, but like, you get good at being like, oh, all right, well, guess this wasn't my day. Like,
and if you look at people who collect handmade ceramics and you look at potters themselves, their cabinets, it is a total mismatch of pots, but each one has a story. Each one has a person that made it who you remember, and then when they made it, they had a story. So it really carries that story on.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was going to mention was there's a real change today, in the sense that there are so many people that are doing so much online that they're striving and they're thirsting to hold something real. And so I think that's helping the craft movement kind of come back. And I personally think that that's a wonderful thing. I think children should always be able to hold a cup that's been handmade. You know, they should always be able to eat out of a handmade item. So
yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think learning how to make stuff too sometimes teaches the importance and the value behind the process. So, you know, when we teach classes up at Liberty Town, a lot of times people will go, oh, well, whew, this isn't for me, but now I understand why your mugs cost so much money, because it does. It takes a lot of time and effort, and that's not our goal at the end of the day. But it's kind of interesting to see people understanding the craft itself and the difficulty and the mild crazies that all of us who do this for a living have. You know, it's a good crazy, I think, but it's like we're all obsessed. It's like it has to be an obsession. There's no logical reason to do what we do. Like, there's a lot of easier ways to live.
Yeah.
But and, it's, you have to do it.
Yeah, and we both teach. And one of the nice things about teaching, I think the students end up, whether they throw a great pot or not, they're actually learning a lot of problem-solving skills mm-hmm. and how to make something work, even though you're not a master at it. And it truly is, it's one of those things. Art is always advancing your knowledge of whatever you are, you know, an economist or whatever, because it is about problem solving.
Yeah, totally. And I think so much of what we see, especially with kids too, is like they're cutting art programs, they're cutting physical, you know, activities at school. And so, you know, kids are getting diagnosed with ADD when in fact they're basically like their creativity and their energy is being stifled by the regimented nature of their school systems, right? And it is what it is. Like, I understand why they're making the choices that they're making. But sometimes I'll get these kids into our class and they'll be bouncing off the wall. And so you put a piece of clay in their hands and they have like this object, and they all I ever tell kids in the class is my only rule for the class is that you have to make something out of clay. It can be anything you want, and you should see like the look on their face is like, oh really, okay, like I've got all these ideas in my head.
Within 3 minutes to 5 minutes they are silent.
Silent.
It's awesome.
It's clay is, and I always tell parents, clay is the best babysitter you'll ever get. Like, because they sit there and they're making, and they're telling, sometimes they'll talk, but it'll be like they're telling you a story about what they're doing with their thing and like the creatures and the like the things that are informing their decisions. And
but it's that creativity coming out.
Yeah, like a kid the other day made a unicorn play with like a death unicorn on it. And I was like, oh, where does a death unicorn? And she had a portal and like all this other stuff going on. I was like, this is insane, but it's awesome on every level. But yeah, so yeah, kids are amazing. And you teach more adults than I do, but adults are amazing too. I don't want to slag off adults.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
Absolutely. And actually with a lot of the adults I teach, once they start to learn, you get that glow in your eyes. And you really go back to that creative child-like, you know, mental abilities. And that creativity comes out. And they just smile. I mean, they smile from ear to ear. They love it.
It's a true achievement. Like, it's so rare when you get to be an adult that you actually get to, like, try something new and achieve something, right? So, like, you remember the feeling of learning how to swim or ride a bike. And, like, learning how to throw a pot is very similar. Like, it's a lot of struggle. And then that first time you get something, that intent turns into something. Like, you intend to do something and your fingers and your hands and your feet all go together to do it. It's like you could just throw a Super Bowl right then and there. I remember that feeling, like, of getting back on the wheel and the first time I pulled a pot up and it did exactly what I wanted to do and being like, yes! Everybody, this little lump of clay, look at it. It has a hole in the middle exactly where I wanted it to be.
You two are doing exactly what you need to be doing. I mean, you are both just passionate about this. It's fantastic. This has been so much fun. We've got to do more of these because we've just scratched the surface on things.
Oh, yes.
Kevin, if someone wants to get a hold of you and look at your stuff, what's the best way to do that?
Either RodrickStudios.com, RodRiGue, and then studios with an S on the end, or on Instagram, RodrickKevin. Or at Roderick Kevin. Mm-hmm. Either one of those two are a great way to get in touch with me. So
yeah, and I'm Didi at PotteryNerd.com and D Lecky on Instagram.
There is so much to talk about because I want to talk to you sometime, Didi, just about what goes on at Liberty Town. And
you can fill an encyclopedia.
Kevin, there's just a lot going on here. This has been great. The three of us need to do this again and do this more frequently. This was fantastic. Sophia Street Studios is where you two are based, but
in the basement.
Yes, we haven't come up with our name yet. We're arguing over that, but yeah. Next. Us and Rachel Ruddle. She's our third
comrade.
Yeah. She's down here with us. So it's just three of us trying to keep dust out of our houses.
When you come up with a name, I'll come back and we'll talk more. Thank you two both so much. This has been so much fun.
Thank you.
I will say that we will be a part of the Pottery Throwdown.
Oh, yeah. June 8th.
Which I guess you'll be interviewing mm-hmm. them as well.
Yep. But come out to that and you get to see all the cool stuff. And Liberty Town will have a little station where you can try out pottery.
Yep.
So you get to try it out.
I've never tried it. I've watched it. I've watched it. I've never done it.
We're going to make you do it. You come. We're going to sit you down at a wheel. We're going to put you on video.
We have instructors there to help you along the way.
I don't want my hands to get dirty, though.
Is that a thing for you?
Yeah.
Oh, this is not going to work out. No. Avoid the wheel. Just film somebody else doing it. Get somebody else. Like,
maybe we'll have some slab work there. That would work.
Did you just not hear the man? He doesn't want to get his hands dirty.
No, I like...
You think slab work isn't dirty. People who don't like getting their hands dirty, that's still dirty. Dirty Kevin. Like, they don't like it.
If you like listening to this podcast, please link, comment, and subscribe. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. You can also find us on Channel B online at b1015.com, keyword podcasts. If you want to talk about your business, I'd like to hear from you. You can contact me, ted@wfvaradio.com. ted@wfvaradio.com. We would like to highlight your business. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Ted Schubel. We'll see you next time when we become all business.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by the host and guests in this podcast are their own and not necessarily those of Centennial Broadcasting.